Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is exploring mysteries. Each of my guests will help us explore mysteries, whether it's criminal mysteries, management mysteries, or the mysteries of the cosmos. My first guest has been described as the real-life Clarice Starling from Silence of the Lambs. She's a former FBI profiler turned TV personality. We'll discuss the mysteries she solved in her book, Special Agent. My second guest is the chairman and CEO of ASI Consulting Group, LLC, and a leading practitioner of Six Sigma. We'll discuss his revolutionary process for achieving extraordinary results contained in his book, The Power of Leo. My third guest is a theoretical physicist and a string theorist. We'll explore parallel universes and the deep laws of the cosmos contained in his book, The Hidden Reality. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Candace DeLong, has a decorated career as a leading FBI criminal profiler. She's been described, as I said, as the real-life Clarice Starling, the FBI profiler featured in The Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal. Candace is the former head field profiler in the San Francisco for the FBI, a role that placed her on the forefront of some of the FBI's most memorable cases, including the Unabomber case in Lincoln, Montana. Candace now uses her profiling and investigation skills to explore some of the history's most fascinating female killers in a show, Deadly Women, on the ID Network, and its companion special, Deadly Women Killer Countdown. Additionally, Candace lends her expertise to Facing Evil with Candace DeLong, in which she sits down with real-life deadly women to reveal the motivation behind their crimes. Joining us from the Bay Area, hi, Candace, how are you today?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Well, good morning. I'm terrific. Thank you for being a guest on our show. And on behalf of all of my listeners, thank you for your service to our country in the FBI.
Thank you so much for that. It was a great 20 years.
Oh, I imagine that it was. Now, the first question that I have to ask you, how did you first become interested in profiling?
Well, I was a psychiatric nurse when the FBI recruited me, actually, for almost a decade. And at the time, I was head nurse of a maximum security psychiatric unit, the Institute of Psychiatry in Chicago, and that's when the FBI recruited me, way back, in 1979. In 1980, I became an agent. And a few years after that, I was picked to be trained by the Behavioral Science Unit, the founders of the unit, John Douglas, Roy Hazelwood, Barb Ressler, to be trained in criminal profiling while remaining in a FBI field division. So I stayed in Chicago, but I worked with state and local police, usually because the types of crimes that lend themselves to profiling are generally state violations. And then I finished out my career in San Francisco.
I see. Now, talk to us about the development of the behavioral science unit at the FBI, because you were there from the beginning. How has it evolved over time, and how realistically is it portrayed in television and the movies?
Well, I wasn't quite there in the beginning. I was in the second wave. The early wave was the mid to late 70s, a group of FBI agents at the FBI Academy who were instructors at the National Academy, which the National Academy is police officers that come from all over the world to get additional training at the FBI. And a lot of them were bringing unsolved cases to their instructors, John Douglas, as I mentioned, Roy Hazelwood, and an idea developed about, can you look at a crime scene and work backwards and try and figure out, based on what you're looking at in the crime scene, how was the victim murdered? What was the victim all about? Was she high risk to be victimized or low risk? What did the murderer do to get her or him? What did they do after the crime? If you're looking at, you've got a picture, look backwards and try and figure out the personality and lifestyle sketch, as opposed to a composite artist sketch, of the type of person that the police should be looking for, that's very likely the type of person that committed this crime.
So very much deductive reasoning, working backwards,
yes,
from the crime scene. Got it. All right. My guest is Candace DeLong. We're talking about her distinguished career at the FBI, also her understanding of human behavior and human psychology. And one of the things that I find fascinating is the parallel between your profiling work in the FBI and now what you're doing on television, mm-hmm, and how you're profiling women. So I think it's interesting. What are some of the key differences between the sexes when it comes to crime? Why are women less likely to commit violent crimes?
Well, it seems that they're making up for lost time. The numbers are rising. The women that commit murder and violent crimes. I think part of the answer to your question is women have always been capable. It's simply that in a number of cases we present on the TV show Deadly Women, women just can't, over the years, the centuries, have not been suspected of crimes because people have a hard time wrapping their head about around the concept that a woman who's, you know, we are the life givers, the nurturers of small children, could ever take a life. And sometimes these women have been found standing over a body with a bloody knife in their hand and a smile on their face, and still were not suspected.
Mm.
One of the big differences between men and women when they kill is women tend, when women murder, the death of the victim has a very specific goal for that woman. It's either she wants his money, she wants her stuff. Sometimes the motivation is jealousy and revenge. I want you out of the path of my husband, so I will kill you. They don't take a lot of passion and glory and revel in the actual murder itself.
Whereas men do. Men tend
do.
To hold trophies and things of that,
yes,
nature. Well, let's just follow on with the whole idea about women and so forth, because they have not been suspected in large numbers of committing these crimes. When a woman does commit a violent crime, is it easier or harder to track them down and to arrest them?
Oh, that's a good question. I've never had that question. I think based on the hundreds of cases that we've presented on both of these TV shows, it's not so much that they're harder to track down, it's just that no one's looking at them oftentimes. Police are a lot more sophisticated these days about human behavior than they used to be, and so women are not getting away with murder at the rate that they used to.
Gotcha. All right, my guest is Candace DeLong. She's the author of the book Special Agent, My Life on the Front Lines as a Woman in the FBI. We're talking about crime. Talk to us about some of the more famous cases. The one that I'm fascinated with is the Ted Kaczynski case, the Unabomber case.
Mm-hmm.
How did you assist in that manhunt? What led to Kaczynski's arrest?
Well, I had nothing to do with profiling that case. I was strictly an investigator, and I had just transferred to San Francisco in 1995, the fall of 95, and Ted Kaczynski became a viable suspect in around January of 96 when his brother David, a social worker in Schenectady, New York, read the Unabomber's manifesto that had been published a few months earlier. And when he read it, he just became filled with dread because it looked very similar to a document that his brother Ted had written 25 years earlier about the dangers of technology. And there were three things in the manifesto that jumped off the pages and kind of bit David in the nose. They were expressions that his brother used. One was fear of influence. One was you can't have your cake and eat it too, only he flipped it and got it backwards. To tell you the truth, I'm not sure which way is accurate.
Okay.
And one other thing, and that made him go look at a Unabomber, FBI Unabomber, which was widely published, calendar of events, event meaning a bombing, or when something was mailed and when it went off. And he realized that his brother Ted had actually lived in three cities where bombs had actually been placed, which means the bomber had to be in that city.
Right.
And then he and his wife contacted a private investigator who took Ted went back to Chicago and went up to the attic of his mother's house and found that document that Ted had written 25 years earlier. They gave it to a female investigator they knew and asked her not to reveal their names. She took it to a retired FBI profiler who is also a linguistics expert, Clint Van Zandt. And he read, he compared the, basically they said, we want you to tell us if you think the person that wrote the Unabomber's Manifesto is the same person that wrote this document. And Van Zandt got called them back and said, in his opinion, called the investigator back, it was probably about an 80% chance the same person wrote both documents and they needed to contact the FBI. And that's how it all got started.
Wow, an incredible story. My guest is Candace DeLong. Candace, Ted Kaczynski, he's an example of a domestic terrorist. But how are profilers being used right now to fight international terrorism, and how effective have these profilers been in thwarting terrorist plots?
Well, the type of profiling that I was trained to do, criminal personality profiling, and the kind that you see on shows like Criminal Minds, is where you've got a crime, but you don't know who committed it, and you need to focus the investigation on a particular type of person and look for that person.
Got it.
Whereas when you do know who you're fighting, you do know who the criminal is, whether it's terrorism or a murder, then what we call it is a psychological assessment of that person and looking at everything about their behavior. In the case of terrorists, we simply learn everything and anything there is to know about them, but the best source of information about any criminal behavior is talking to the criminal themselves. And so there are a lot of terrorists who have committed domestic terrorism and international terrorism that do talk with the FBI and do talk with the CIA. And that is one of the main sources, of course, of knowledge. There used to be an expression in the 50s, if you want to know about a Cadillac, ask the man that owns one. Well, if you want to know about a criminal, go to another criminal that committed similar crimes and talk to them.
Very interesting. My guest is Candace DeLong. Candace, have you read the book Terrorists in Love yet?
Yeah.
An investigation of a man who is also a criminologist, and he has talked to various terrorists and gotten the inside story. As a profiler, you might find that very interesting.
Wait a minute. I did see him interviewed on television.
Well, you just need to talk to Billy the Brain and go to my website, and you can hear him interviewed there as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah. My guest is Candace DeLong. She's the author of the book Special Agent, My Life in the Front Lines as a Woman in the FBI. And Candace, you've solved a number of high-profile crimes in your career. Which one or two really stand out in your mind as being the most memorable?
Oh, the Tylenol murders of 1981. In Chicago, in late September 1981, seven people, including the first one to be known of, a little 12-year-old girl, dropped dead after ingesting Tylenol. You know, a lot of people that are under 35, when I tell this story, look at me and cock their head and say, well, why would anyone take, you know, the Tylenol turned out to be tainted with potassium cyanide. Why would anyone take a pill from a bottle that's been opened? Well, the Tylenol murder case of 1981 is the reason that we now have tamper-proof lids and containers on everything over-the-counter, not just medications, but lipstick and face powder and toothbrushes and things like that. And it's because of that crime that came about. And it is technically unsolved. We believe we know who did it. And he was arrested, convicted, and served 15 years for extorting Johnson & Johnson. The Johnson & Johnson,
the maker
received an extortion note for $1 million. I'll stop the killing.
Mm-hmm.
Was right out of Austin Powers. And we got that guy. And we believe he is also probably the murderer, but we could not prove it in an American court of law.
Amazing, amazing. Well, what I find interesting about the Tylenol case of 1981 is that it's a great example of government and business actually working together.
Oh, yeah.
The government with the FBI solving the crime, but the hero in my mind of all of this was James Burke, who was then the CEO of the company that manufactured Tylenol, and how he came to the forefront pulling all of those bottles of Tylenol off the shelf to prevent that from happening in the future. So it was a great combination of government and business working together.
There were people that turned in bottles of Tylenol. People were asked to turn them in. There were over 100 more tainted capsules found.
Oh, my. And so that's 100 people that would have been killed that because of the combination of the FBI and the government working together with the company to pull it. That's an amazing story. Candace, I want to ask you, though, as a profiler of serial criminals, how difficult is it for you to remain objective? I mean, how do you prevent from slipping from objectivity into either empathy or sympathy for the criminals that you're profiling?
I think empathy is important in criminal profiling, and I think my 10 years in clinical psychiatry served me very well and continue to serve me, because what a profiler has to do to really understand what happened at a crime scene is kind of, I know this is kind of an overused expression, but get into the head of the killer. That doesn't mean you become like a killer, but it does for me help me understand motivation. If I can understand why I believe what the motive is behind a crime, then getting to the person that committed that crime is much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I frequently hear on the radio or the TV reports of a murder, and then the term, the police have no motive. Well, in listening to how that somebody was found at a bus stop in the woods, in a bus stop off to the side behind a bush, and multiple stab wounds and some other description, I know what the motive was. I mean, the motive was interpersonal violence, probably sexual, sexually motivated violence.
Yeah.
The motive is there if you look, and empathy does help understand, and understanding helps put handcuffs on.
Well, that makes sense. My guest is Candace DeLong. She's author of the book Special Agent. She's also host of two TV shows, Deadly Women and Deadly Women Killer Countdown. Candace, what do you want people to take away from your body of work, the book and the television shows and everything else? What do you want? What impression do you want to leave with them?
Well, a couple things. The first for me personally is when opportunity's knocking, even though it may be something completely far afield from what you think your calling is, go through the door anyway. You might be surprised. That's the personal aspect. The professional aspect is regarding deadly women, deadly people. Be careful. Be cautious. I don't trust people in terms of I meet someone, I completely trust them. I don't not trust them until they give me a reason to. But wolves can come in sheep's clothing, and they can be women, and they can be children.
Hmm. A frightening thought with that last thought. My guest has been Candace DeLong. Candace, you've piqued the interest of, I'm sure, a lot of listeners out there. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book or the television shows, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I do not have a website, but Amazon, any of the sites where you can get books. The book is out of print, but you can get used copies, and some of the used copies actually are almost brand new.
Including our own bank of books right here in Ventura, two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street, both in Ventura. Candace, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.